Hello, my very good friends, and welcome to another episode of Time Between Times Storytelling with me, Owen Staton. First of all, a little apology. This episode is just a little late. I have been quite unwell this week. My voice is gruffer than usual, but my heart is still in the tale, I can assure you. So welcome to the fire pit at the heart of the forest. For another tale traditionally told. Some news. I now have a website, welshstoryteller.com. If you go there, you will find lots of things to do with me. I have a blog. I have an area for my voice acting. I have a page for the tales. I have a contact area. Please go and check it out and let me know what you think. It'll be a good place where we can gather and have a chat together, and also where you can find all of the episodes of Time Between Times and any other project I'm involved in. www.welshstoryteller.com. Please, my friends, go and have a look. Today's tale is something a little bit different. As a very young lad, I can remember opening a book about ghosts and seeing a drawing that had a huge influence on me. I won't tell you what that drawing is just yet, only that it's from one of the most famous ghost stories in all of the world. When I was unwell last week, I sort of revisited it. It's a simple tale, but incredibly fascinating. So, sit back, close your eyes if it's safe to do so, and journey with me. You are sat at your fireplace. You have finished your food. The nights have grown lighter now. The sun stays in the air just that little bit longer. The day seems drawn out, as if night will never fall. But we always wait for the time between times. So you stand up, put on your jacket, go to your front door and go outside. The air is fresh, the air is cool. The air blows in your hair and makes you feel alive. You walk down to the road, take the right turn and head to the forest. There they are in front of you, the silent sentinels that are the trees that guard the way into the place we want to go. But you know the way in. You know the path that leads into the trees, and you take a step and look behind you and leave behind the modern world before stepping on that path and heading into the woods. There it is, the old mossy tower. There it is, the babbling brook. And there it is, that place you've come to visit, the fire pit at the heart of the forest. Before you step in there, you stand and look at it for a moment. You sit back and realise that this is a place you have now been coming for many years. This is a place of peace, a place of purpose, a place where people gather and let their cares wash away. And tonight your friends are here. Friends of the past. Friends of the present. Friends you've yet to meet. Anyone you want to be here is here right now. You greet each other and you sit by the fire pit. The flames are spluttering, the heat is on your hands, and you look up and see that the sun and the moon share the same sky. For now is the time between times, the time when it's neither night nor day, but the sun has gone and the sky is grey, the time when the veil between our world and the fairy world grows wafer, wafer thin, so thin that for a moment, and just a few moments, you can reach into the realm of fairy, and they can reach into our world. You see, now is the time that people see lights in the sky. Now is the time that people see the Tylwyth Teg. And now is the time that people see ghosts. The people who walked this land long ago, who stand just on the edge of vision, waiting for us to witness them, to know that they are still here, for they have never left. And today, at the time between times, we will hear one of the most famous ghost tales of all. It happened on February in 1953, in the walled wonder that is the city of York, a place with history that goes back millennia. There was once a Roman fort there, then the Vikings came, then the Normans, and even now visitors from all around the world go to the city of York seeking history and seeking spirits. You see, it is famous for its ghosts. There is even a ghost merchant on a street called the Shambles at the heart of York, its overhanging eaves blocking out the light as you walk along its cobbled road. But in the centre of York, near the Minster, there is a beautiful, boundless old building called the Treasurer's House. It has stood there for many hundreds of years, in its present form, since the middle of the 16th century. But in the 19th century, it was reformed, built upon, and looks very much like it does today. A stone structure, a solid, and as solitary as any other. Surrounded by luscious green gardens, this is a place where people come from all around the world to look inside its walls, to look at the antiques, the tapestries, and know the history of the many occupants who have been there over hundreds of years. And it was on this day, in February 1953, that a young lad called Harry Martindale made his meandering way up the path towards the front door to do some work. You see, Harry was 18 years old, and Harry was a plumber, an apprentice. He had not long started himself on this career and was willing to do the best work he could to make the best possible job. He was always happy to travel and work in the city he called home. And as he walked up to the treasurer's house on that day, he had little wonder, little knowledge, little way of knowing that his life would change totally on this day. He knocked on the great wooden door, stepped inside the great hallway and looked at the stairs leading up to the fourth floor. Wooden panelled walls surrounded him, and a chill permeated the area. It was busy, it was bustling, and it was full of workmen. His job was to go to the cellar and drill a hole in the thick stone wall so they could bring a heating pipe through. For now, in the 50s, they were installing a new central heating system. He carried his tools and went to the top of the stairs, looked down into the darkness. Just before he stepped down, the curator of the place gave him an old electric lamp to work from, and Harry made his way one by one down the stone steps into what felt like the heart of darkness. He emerged in the cellar, rounded roof, and a great stone wall all around him, just the glow of the light and the shadows inside. He could just about hear the people talking upstairs. He brought down a ladder and set it up and started to hammer and chisel and cut. The wall was thicker than he thought. This job would take longer than he thought. After only 2 hours, his arms seemed to ache with the work. And he started to hear a noise. At first it sounded like music from upstairs, and he thought that one of his colleagues, one of the people working in the building, must have brought an old radio or wireless and was listening to the music up there. But this was not a song of the day. Not even something from Harry's memory. This was a long, lonesome, dirging cry that seemed to echo through the chamber. He thought about coming down from the ladder and going up and asking whoever was playing this music to stop, and he took a step down the rungs. But then out of the corner of his eye, he saw something that would amaze and wonder him for the rest of his life. Stepping through the stone wall of the cellar of the treasurer's house in York in February 1953 came a Roman soldier, a plume on his helmet, a round shield, and wearing a green tunic. What was strange, if it could be any stranger, was that this soldier was walking at a level where you could only see him from the knees up. Harry looked at him in wonder, and the first thing he noticed that the soldier was unshaven, unkempt, and dirty as he travelled onwards. The sound of the horn grew stronger still, and Harry turned again, and then, to his amazement, out of the wall, just behind this first soldier, there came a horse. An old shire-looking horse with bushy fetlocks, being ridden by another Roman soldier, again a green tunic, looking battered and small. Harry thought he must only be about 5 foot tall. The first soldier was now marching through the chamber, followed by the horse, and Harry's heart felt like it would beat out of his chest. He took a step back and fell from his ladder, clattering and clanging on the stone floor below. Banging his back, a pain shot up to his head. But this he did not even think about, not for a moment, for then came a third soldier, a fourth soldier, a fifth soldier, and then a soldier playing a great horn, which made the noise that caused the dirge, that made these men march in lockstep through the cellars of the treasurer's house. Harry curled in the corner of the room, hoping that none of these soldiers would see him. They were all as clear and as real as any man he had ever seen. These were not spirits translucent and lost. These seemed like actual human beings marching from the knee up. He watched them, over 20 in all, until every single one of them vanished through the opposite wall. Gone. Gone from his sight. But not, of course, gone from his memory. Lifting himself, he tripped over the ladder and fell to the ground once more before rushing up the steps. He got to the top and then his breath was lost. And he sat there with his head in his hands, amazed at what he had seen. It may have been minutes, it might have been half an hour, before he felt a tap on his shoulder, and he spun around and looked, and there was the curator of the treasurer's house, who had, earlier that day, given him the light to illuminate the room. And the curator said to Harry, "You, my friend, have the look of someone who has just seen the Roman soldiers." Harry climbed to his feet and rushed out of the building. He ran along the pathway and into the streets of York, all the way back to the house, which was where the firm he worked for called home. There he said to them, "I am not going back there," and immediately signed himself off sick with his doctor. Such was the fright of seeing the soldiers. One of the strangest things of all is that Harry did not speak of his experiences. He was sacked from his job, for he refused to return. But only in the 1970s did he summon the courage to talk of what he had seen. And when he did so, he was amazed to find that many others came forward. There was talk of, at the turn of the century, in about 1900, a guest of the house had gone to the cellar to find some wine, only to be confronted by a Roman soldier who stood there and stared at her, blocking the stairway. And not long after Harry's sighting, another member of the National Trust who worked in the building said that she had also seen the soldiers, and her young daughter, who had not seen them, claimed that at night, when everything was dark and all the lights were out, even though they lived on the fourth floor of the building, she could still hear the horn blowing. As a child, I opened a book and saw the picture. It was a sketch of the Roman soldiers marching through the sewer, and of Harry, sitting on his backside, a look of amazement on his face, his plumbing tools scattered over the room. And I read that story, and it made me think that maybe ghosts were true. There were many parts of the story which people ridiculed Harry about, the green tunics, the round shield, the plumed helms, and the fact that he could only see the soldiers from the knees up. But things were borne out, you see. For underneath that sewer, that cellar, they found an old Roman road, about 18 inches deeper, or about knee height, if you are walking on it. So it made sense that the soldiers, that you could not see their feet. It also became knowledge that the garrison based in York were an auxiliary garrison, who wore a slightly different uniform to what other Roman soldiers did, and many of them were found to wear green tunics, just like Harry had seen. But he was an 18-year-old plumber who had no knowledge of Roman soldiers. He had a great career, 30 years in the police service, but sadly passed away in 2014. But Harry Martindale was the sole witness to one of the greatest ghost apparition sightings the world has ever seen. Today you can still visit the treasurer's house, and if you're lucky enough, you can go to the cellar, and who knows what you will find. But today's story, at the time between times, the time when it's neither night nor day, but the sun has gone and the sky is grey, was told by me, Owen Staten, to you, all about the Roman soldiers of York. Thank you for joining me, my friends. If you want to support the channel, why not buy me a Ko-fi at www.ko-fi.com, or become one of my growing band of Patreon followers at patreon.com/Owen Staten. And please remember, my friends, visit welshstoryteller.com. You will find all the news about the channel there, and your company would be very much appreciated. Thank you for listening. Diolch yn fawr, ffrindiau. Take care of yourselves. Nos da.